My name is Lily, and I've had hidradenitis suppurativa, HS, for years. I finally found some relief since taking Cosentyx. Relief means I can show up more.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe hidradenitis suppurativa, HS. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com.
Ask your dermatologist about Cosentyx.
Welcome back to Listen to Your Heart. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Jerry's Heart.
Today's topic, Repatha, evolocumab. Heart, why'd you pick this one?
Well, Jerry, for people who have had a heart attack, like us, diet and exercise might not be enough to lower the risk of another one.
Okay.
To help know if we're at risk, we should be getting our LDL-C, our bad cholesterol, checked, and talking to our doctor.
I'm listening.
And if it's still too high, Repatha can be added to a statin to lower our LDL-C and our heart attack risk.
Guess it's time to ask about Repatha.
Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Serious allergic reactions can occur. Get medical help right away if you have trouble breathing or swallowing, swelling of the face, lips, tongue, throat, or arms. Common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar, and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site.
Listen to your heart.
Ask your doctor about Repatha. Learn more at Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Labour Party MEP Éan O'Riordan was writing during the week, and he wrote about Darkness Into Light, because this is the weekend where that event happens. And he begins in a way that you wouldn't expect, because he starts with, "I've never liked Darkness Into Light time of year. I've never participated in any of the walks. I've never contributed to any of the fundraising." And he goes on to say that the posters about local walks and advertisements online and on radio made me wince slightly. "It was only last week, when a friend of mine posted about his own Darkness Into Light fundraising efforts, that I began to reflect on why I feel the way I do about the initiative. The reality is that in the recent past, I had my own darkness to deal with. Not something I particularly like admitting or that I'm overly comfortable sharing, but it's the truth." He joins us this morning. Éan O'Riordan, what happened to him?
I suppose a couple of years ago, quite a number of events in my life kind of coincided and became very difficult for me to deal with. So a number of changes, negative ones, and then there was a bereavement in there as well, all came together, and I found myself in a very, very difficult position. And I suppose the reason I wanted to talk about it or post a thing online was just maybe to give the message that if anybody is going through a period of darkness, that it's not unusual. That what I've learned through my experience is that thousands of people go through it. I don't have a one-liner or a book or a podcast or a piece of advice for people. I don't have an inspirational quote. But that's my central message, because it can feel intensely lonely if you're going through something which is particularly dark in your life, and you can feel like you're a bit of a failure. It can feel as if everybody else seems to have their life sorted and you're going through this alone. But that's not the case. So in terms of Darkness Into Light, I had to reflect on it, because a friend of mine was doing it, And I kind of reflect as to why I haven't really leaned into this in the past. I mean, normally politicians will go on the walk, and it's just not something I've ever really wanted to do. But when reflecting on why that was, it was because I had my own issues that I don't think I really needed to. I don't think going to an event like that was gonna help me.
As your day job for years has been one that puts you in position of long working hours, of a fair degree of stress, of public abuse, whether it be in social media or any other context. How was this different or worse? What was it that made it not something that you could cope with the way you coped with those kind of pressures?
Because work is work, and sometimes, you know, you understand the boundaries around work, and there's people around you who are going through the same thing, who are experiencing the same type of pressures or whatever in work. But I found that work was the place I went as a kind of a sanctuary from things in my head. So it was actually the transfer from work into my own life, which was actually quite problematic for me. So, as I say in the piece, it became a kind of a regular for me just to sit in the car for a while after I got home, because maybe I was kind of trying to cling to the work day a little bit. But I found moving into the personal space where it is just you and your head was more difficult, you know.
Was there a sense of loss of control?
Well, loss of control. I mean, it's very hard to explain. It's just that these things are swimming around your head a lot. Somebody described it once to me that I looked like I had a lot of tabs open in my forehead. You know, when you have a computer screen and somebody has 47 tabs open, and it was like, that's what I was like. So yeah, I was just kind of carrying it around a lot for quite a number of years. Yeah, I found that work was work. Work was fine. It did actually creep into work the odd time. I probably shouldn't be laughing, but there was one occasion where I made a particularly impassioned speech and I got a lot of credit for it. I took the head off Norma Foley, and I think about 75% of that speech was a genuine annoyance about how the Minister for Education was handling something. And probably about 25% of it was my own issues in my own head and my own frustrations. So apologies to Norma Foley for that one.
But bubbling up as anger, bubbling
yeah,
up as.
But I made this kind of impassioned speech, and it did bubble up into anger. And so that didn't happen that often, but it happened that time. And I had to keep an eye on that, yeah.
Well, that's the bit that I'm wondering about is from when you are going through that kind of thing, is it different to normal stress? Is it different to a pile of stressors? Is there a reaction that you either can't explain or can't control? What does it feel like?
Well, you just have to compartmentalize it. I mean, it's stuck to you the whole time, but in work you have a distraction, and in work you're dealing with a lot of problems that other people have, and you can delve yourself into that, and whatever's happening to you is absolutely secondary to what you're doing, and it's busy and you're around people, and it's a great distraction. The issue comes that maybe when you're by yourself or in your own circumstance, in your own private time, that's when you really want to get back to work. And that's not a healthy balance at all. So, you know, you'd hear people talking about, look, you know, people say, go talk to somebody. People say, you know, take some medication, listen to this podcast, read this book. I don't know. Every single person's darkness is their own. It's unique to them. The circumstances are unique to them. So getting out of it or dealing with it is going to be unique to them as well.
But what were the symptoms for you? What was your unique experience of it? When you closed the door in the house in the evening and in the quiet time, what was it?
Just a lack of energy, a lack of enthusiasm for anything. Basic things like that, you know. I wrote in the piece just an inability to do the most basic chore. You'd go to bed, and I chose the words very carefully, but with a heavy head and wet eyes, and sometimes you just find yourself touching your face and realizing that you've been upset, and that would be during the day. You might be driving somewhere, you might be in work, you might be out somewhere by yourself, and then you'd realise that, yeah. So, yeah, but it's a very private thing. And being a guy, and this is the problem with us guys, is that the last thing in the world you want to do is to tell anybody about it. Because you also don't want to be bad company. You don't want to be the guy who, oh, here he comes with his, you know, with his list of problems. Because you don't become somebody who's worth being around, you know. So you do kind of, you know, put it to one side and you put out the brave face. But people aren't stupid as well.
Did you perceive that at the time as being a logical response to the problems that you were dealing with? Or was it something where you felt there's something unreasonable here in the way that I'm reacting? This is beyond normal control.
Well, like I've had problems before and I didn't have this reaction. And then, you know, people have bereavements all the time and they don't have this reaction. People have changes in their lives. They have relationship breakups all the time. People have gone through unbelievable tragedy. And, you know, and I felt maybe on one level that I was... You know, there was something wrong. There was something. It was an unreasonable reaction in my head, and in my heart to what was happening. So, you know, I don't know. I didn't really want to go and talk about it to anybody, but it's just something I had to plod my way through. But it became a something I just got used to. That this is me now. You know, I used to be something else. I used to wake up with a certain freedom in my head or a way of addressing the day. And now I wake up like this. And
like what?
Just heavy-headed, clouded head. You know, not looking forward. Kind of meandering through the day rather than, you know... skipping through the day or whatever, maybe I might have done it. And I don't describe skipping is maybe a silly phrase to use. You know what I mean? Like being more positive. So, yeah. So you kind of maybe think, well, look, that's maybe what happens. That's maybe where I am now. And I just need to get used to this.
As in, that's a result of a relationship breakup. That's a result of bereavement. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, I mean, I have new circumstances. I had old circumstances. I have new circumstances. Clearly, they're not bringing me a lot of joy, but this is where I am and this is what it's going to be like. And
that's a fairly bleak position to find yourself accepting, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, you can only control what you can control. It was pretty bleak, yeah.
You say was. How did you get out of it?
Well, I don't have any advice. I mean,
but you have an experience.
I have
something
experience.
Changed
yeah,
for you.
Yeah. So, well, I don't want, like, sometimes in my position, people come in and say, you know, well, the government's fault, and you know, government should be doing more, or spending more, or whatever. Or to say, well, look, I'll tell you what I did, and look at me now. And I have a sense that people in this position, the last thing they want to hear is of somebody who does a kind of a look at me now speech. It just got easier over time, and yeah, I sought a level of professional help, which has definitely benefited me. But it is something that I look back on rather than I'm living. But I think when all this talk about mental health is happening, and you're in a position of responsibility, and the darkness and the light thing was happening. You know, I suppose there is a percentage of you which says, you know, maybe if you just said this, somebody else could get something out of it. But yeah, it's I'm not going to pretend that everybody can make their way out of it, or that everybody can put it behind them over a defined period of time. It might take a very, very long time for some people. For me, it was a few years.
A few years?
Yeah, yeah, from... I think in the last year, it's I've turned a corner on it, but yeah, it was about three and a half years.
And was there a moment that you can pinpoint where you said, "This is the corner being turned"? Was there something that somebody said to you? Was there a pharmaceutical intervention?
No. It's just a little bit different every day, and you find yourself thinking about things a little bit less. And that's what it was for me. For other people, it may be somebody intervenes in your life and takes you by the shoulders and screams in your face and says, "Cop yourself on," slaps you around a little bit. Or you know, somebody new comes into their life and turns things around. But for me, it's just whatever was on my mind, was in my head, I just don't think about it as much anymore. And that's how I've I've gotten through it. And I think for anybody going through it, I suppose, and the remarkable thing about the piece is the people who have contacted me, almost exclusively men, who have of a similar age to myself, some of them in the public eye, who have admitted to me in direct messages on social media as to what they've gone through or what they're going through. And they don't really have any advice for me either. It's just a case of, look, I went through this as well, but I don't think I'd really go public about it. And I'm not really sure if I'm going to regret going, talking to you about this or writing what I've written. But I think, look, being honest is never a bad thing.
You talked about the professional help. Did it give you a different insight into either yourself or what had happened to you?
I'll tell you what it does. I think what it does is that when you have the dark clouds in the head, you go, well, you know something, I have somewhere to go and somebody to talk to about that at an allotted time next Monday. So it puts it off into a certain part of your week. That's what it did for me. You know, it's like, I don't have to think about that now because I know I can talk about that on Friday or Thursday or whatever day I actually get around to meeting the guy who I try to make laugh as often as I can. But then you don't need that to meet that person as often because, you know, your situation just eases, your head just eases. But that's what I found. So it's not necessarily that I got any huge insights into talking to somebody. It's just that I had somewhere in my week where I knew I could go and do that. So if I had something that popped into my head and I was annoyed about something or I was reflecting on something, I go, you know something, I won't do that now because I know and I can do that.
I'm interested in the words that you use to describe the sort of the sensations of it. You talk about having a heavy head. Mm. You talk about having an inner darkness. It's you describe it almost like a physical thing rather than an emotional state. Is that?
I think sometimes it can feel like it's a physical pain, yeah. Yeah.
Why then do you decide to talk about it publicly?
I may decide it was a bad idea. But I looked over what I'd written. I changed a few lines. I changed a few things. I looked it over a period of time and then I put it up. Because I think, like, I do a lot of some work in my work life around a lot of issues that people aren't honest about. And it frustrates me when people aren't honest about, you know, the real reason behind something. It could be drug policy or something like that. And you just get frustrated. Why don't people just tell the truth? And this is one of those things. And I think particularly as a guy, that we're useless, really, when it comes to talking about our emotions and what's going through. I remember talking to a friend of mine, something had changed in my life. And I meet this guy, you know, every now and again for a few beers to talk about Ga. And it turned out that when I told him about what had happened to me, he was able to tell me something that had happened to him and had been happening for years. And we never talked about it. I had no knowledge of this huge pressures that had been on him. He didn't know anything about what's happening to me. And we met regularly. So I think, I don't think any of us want to be people who are always talking about what's in their head or what's troubling them. I don't think that brings joy to anybody's inner circle. But I think certainly it's no harm for people to know that if you do have this in your head, or if you are feeling down, or if there's grief, that it's not just you, and you're not unusual, and that might help some people.
At the peak of it, did you ever think you wouldn't get control of it?
I don't know. I wasn't really looking forward. So that's the funny thing. I kept looking back, so I wasn't really planning on it. It just was something that I had to address. I woke up, it was still there. You go to bed, it's still there. You wake up, it's still there. You hope that over a period of time it won't be as big. And that's effectively what's happened. But, you know,
It doesn't sound like the way you describe it, that it's gone, though.
Well, I mean, I don't like reflecting on it, really. Nobody does. You know, talk about the worst time of your life. Tell me all about it. It's not something that people really want to want to open up about, you know. But I always tell people that you can only control what you can control. There are things in your life that you do have control over. You can control how hard you work. You can control, you know, your how much you exercise, what you eat, what you drink or don't drink, how you carry yourself, how you interact with your kids. These things are all in your control. So the thing that's not in your control maybe is not what you should be focusing on.
To what extent do you think it is entirely in the past for you, or is it something now where you'll be live to the possibilities of how you can react when there are future stressors?
I wouldn't be talking about it if I felt it was still current, you know. Because I know it isn't. So I know I've turned a corner on it. Future stressors, I don't know. I mean, work is can be pretty stressful, but it hasn't. It's proven to be a bit of a saver for me.
Which is odd, because you would have thought, given the job that you do, it would be.
No.
If you're feeling in any way down, that's a hard gig to have to do.
Well, it's how you manage it. I mean, you can kind of you can, you know, there's lots of people in lots of works of life who have front-facing jobs. I remember when I was trained to be a teacher, and we were talking to a lecturer called Mary Burke, and she was talking to us about classroom management. And one of us in the class said, yeah, and it can be difficult, you could be having a bad day. And Mary Burke said, you're not entitled to a bad day. And we all kind of sat back or sat up and listened. She said, you're not entitled to a bad day. The children are there to learn. They're the ones you're there to serve. You are the professional in the room. You are not entitled to a bad day. So I used to think about that. That, you know, sometimes if you have a job of responsibility, that you're not entitled to, you're entitled to maybe things in your head, but you're not entitled to have them impact on your job or on the people who need you. And dealing with children, either as a teacher or as a parent, you know, they don't deserve you being in bad form. And that's a struggle, and it's hard, and you know, some days you feel you're up to it and some days you don't feel you're up to it. But, and that can be a hard thing for people to hear, that you're not entitled to a bad day, but that's kind of what that was my attitude, yeah.
Aon, thanks very much for talking to us this morning.
Thanks.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Join me, Dr. Panico, with Cindy Lauper and Chef Michelle Bernstein to talk about plaque psoriasis and psoriatic arthritis, the potential connection and risk of developing permanent joint damage.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 mg dose and adults with active psoriatic arthritis 150 mg dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur.
Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or cosentyx.com/Cindy.